We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Just to follow up on that thought, Rob, for the automatic bids, again, Nebraska, UC Irvine, Central Michigan, Nevada, Arizona, and Gonzaga, those that do not have to play a conference tournament but earn the auto bids.
Kyle, you gave it a heck of an effort today, my friend. Heck of an effort.
I can't talk. I can't talk. I'm out. Mic drop.
Tales from the Crypt.
Wow. Yeah, that was me. Yours truly, Kyle Schasberger, this past week. Sunday, ACC Baseball Championship. Duke at NC State in Charlotte. Michael Cerber is with me. I'm on Twitter at Kyle Schass. He's at L_Cerberino. Serbs, the voice is somewhat back. Not fully. I'm not 100%. But my goodness, you talk about the Super Bowl broadcast that I had on Sunday. Fortunately, I had a partner who would carry the lion's share of the broadcast. But man, I was hurting in the worst of ways. I felt like I had been beaten, dragged, muddied, bloodied, you name it. I went through the ringer. It was a hellish week, and it ended in a disastrous way for your boy in the Queen City.
What happened? Was this an allergies thing, or was this just overusing your voice by calling all those games?
Overusing my voice. I did a lot of talking last week. I had a couple of podcasts, one with you, local pod I do. I had some other engagements that rendered, you know, an hour of my time of almost consecutively, you know, having to speak, like just things that were out of the ordinary, out of routine. And look, I'm a talker. I got the gift of gab. Like, I know that. But like, still, you're not put in a situation where you talk that much that often for a week straight. And I didn't have any problems when I was in Tuscaloosa a few weeks ago for SEC softball. And really, it's not like I was a part of six baseball games this week, but I didn't call 42 innings, you know? Or, wait, what's 9 times 6? 9 times 56. 6 would be 60. Okay. No, 63,
no, 63.
Right?
Why? Sorry.
We are not math majors.
I was told there'd be no math.
Gosh. So, but, like, you split it up, right? So, I didn't do all of those innings. But, man,
You're like, hang on. You said I didn't do 63. I didn't do 42 innings. You're like, wait, 63. Okay, so I did 36 innings. It's basically 42 innings.
Yeah, whatever. Dude, I was sucking tea and honey down like it was nobody's business on Saturday night into Sunday morning, and I just tried not to talk. You know, I felt it going Saturday during the semifinal round at the ACC tournament, and, you know, you can anticipate to a certain extent what you're about to experience, but, man, that was, you know, that was the worst timing that I could have endured that. So, yes, I sounded like the Crypt, which is very very disturbing for me personally, Serbs. I don't know if you still have nightmares. I don't as much, but like public enemy number one was Chucky my entire life. Uh-huh. And then number two in a close second was the Crypt.
Wow. Man, I didn't even know that.
Woo, man, the Crypt scares the shit out of me, bro. So the fact that I sounded like him, oh, man, it just gives me the heebity-jeebities.
I didn't know. Like, now I feel even better about pulling that Crypt Keeper clip that's hard to say, and dropping it in after you, because I had no idea you were afraid. I did, in fact, know you were afraid of Chucky, which I think a lot of kids, I mean, it's a toy that kids could actually have when the movie came out, and they made it like a murderer, and it's horrifying. It horrified me as a kid. It does not scare me as much as it does you now, today, but props.
On top of my voice hurting, too, and hey, we've got an NCAA tournament. We got a field of 64 that's been set. We're recording on Wednesday morning, so we can give you some reaction, bit of a preview for what's to come here for regional weekend, some of the snubs, some of those at-large teams that got in right there on the positive side of that bubble, and we'll move through the regions and the field as best as we can to kind of give you our thoughts as we look ahead to the start of the NCAA tournament. It's been almost 2 years. You know, we haven't had this since 2019. We'll also wax a little bit of poetic there also, but serves insult to injury. I can't speak. I don't have a voice. Now, I gave three in the third and fourth inning between Duke and NC State. By the way, the Blue Devils, hot. 12 in a row for Chris Pollard's group. Just unreal, the terror that they're on going up against NC State, two of the hottest teams in the country that were going head-to-head. It was a terrific 1-0 final that went the way of the Blue Devils, their first ever ACC title in the tournament era, last coming in 1961 before there was a tournament. But so we're in the booth. We go on the air, Serbs, and I'm rummaging. Rob Joyce, who's my broadcast partner on Sunday, again, kudos to him. I let him down in a big way, but he gave six innings. I gave three, two better than the last one that I've done. Regardless, Joyce is on the air. He's starting the broadcast, and I'm having to rummage through our Pelican case, our radio gear case behind me, to try and find something to fix our access unit, which we use to connect to side and, you know, bounce that off to Sirius and, you know, the whole kit and caboodle. Anyways, I'm in a panic because I'm trying to fix something quickly in the first minute or 2 minutes of the broadcast. Everything was fine. Nobody's dying. But like anybody who's worked in this industry knows, like if something isn't sounding right or something is off, or maybe you're not going to the right place, you know, you're going to get really sweaty and you got to try your best to stay calm and, you know, dissect the issue. Well, I'm diving in this Pelican case. I pull up and I pull up so quickly carrying this other unit that there's a TV that is mounted on the wall, like a flat screen that might be like 32 inches, 32 inch flat screen mounted on the wall that's kind of pulled away from the wall. So it's over my shoulder. So I lift up quickly and I thought I dislocated my shoulder, dude. I barreled into this TV. I might have ripped it off the wall. So hopefully nobody, like, it's loose. Okay. Yeah. The screws are loose. It's not there firm. It's not solid. Hopefully, you know, the folks, Matt Suera, the voice of the Charlotte Knights, which is the AAA affiliate of the White Sox, I might need to send him a text just to have that looked at when he returns to the broadcast booth, because it was wobbly. My shoulder was wobbly. I was in pain the entire game. I've got this bruise and this gash on my right shoulder blade from just lifting up into this TV. I never thought a man could, you know, accidentally walk into a mounted television and nearly just pull the entire wall down. But I tested that theory on Sunday. So I was hurting in a world of ways, not just my voice, but my arm, my shoulder. But hey, I got some R&R, Memorial Day, Lakeside all day, dude. It was a cycle-worthy day, and I'm back here on a Wednesday talking with you, not in person, but look, we live to play another day, and it's game on, baby. NCAA tournament time.
Yeah, I'm ready for the tournament. I'm not the Crypt Keeper, but I've been dealing with allergy stuff for the past few days. Like, the Allegra has me just in your 20s and your late teens, purple haze means something very different than when you're in your 30s. Purple haze 100% means I've taken an Allegra this morning, and now everything is just a little hazy, and the bottle's purple. So there you go. It's been rough. You immediately, when you talk about lifting up into that TV, I think of all the times I've left like a cabinet open, the above cabinet, then like reach down in the bottom cabinet for something else, lift it up, and just squarely hit the top of my head on the corner, like literally trying to just, you know, break my head and my brain open to see what's inside by like getting a plate. So I feel for you. but I really don't send that text to Swearhead. I kind of just want that TV to fall during a game. I don't think it'll fall on anyone, right? More than like, Swearhead usually calls those by himself in the booth, right? So, like, it's not going to fall on anyone more than likely. But I just kind of would like the idea of, like, and the 3-2, what the hell?
Yeah, so, like, I'm feeling it. It's right in my trap, man. Like, right in my right trap, and I'm feeling it right now. It's still tender, a little sore. Speaking of Hayes, man, when I was at the lake, so my dog's name is Hayes, Black Lab. Dude, this is a rad dad moment for a dog. Not for my daughter, but for a dog. Uh-huh. My dog had never been in the water before, ever. He's never really had an opportunity to be lake or poolside or anything.
Took right to it, huh?
Dude, he came. I called him. I was like, Hayes, come here, boy. Come here. And he's like, you know, a little skittish, putting his paw forward, like unsure, you know, hesitating, you know, moving back, moving forward. I'm like, come on, boy. The dude jumps in, and he's just paddling his little booty off. Like, he is killing it. Now, here's the thing. He's freaking out at the same time. Like, I think he loves it.
Yeah.
And he's paddling, and he's doing what he needs to do. But he's never been in water. And, you know, like, I can't even touch where he jumped in. So, like, I'm trying to keep myself above water. And the dude is paddling towards me.
Yeah.
My dog all of a sudden. So, here's the world of pain. Again, no voice. Dislocated, gashed shoulder from a mounted television. And then my dog. And then my dog with his ferocious nails. Just paddling his ass off, is paddling on top of me, on my chest and on my bare bald head, and it looks like I've been wrapped in barbed wire across the left side of my chest, all right, my breast, and then the top of my head, I've got scratches from my dog, and I thought I was gonna die. I mean, I didn't know how to, like, get him back. Luckily, I was able to push him towards the dock.
Yeah.
And he actually was able to wrap his paws around, like, the underwood of the dock and pull himself up. And then I had to hop on the deck. I got blood, you know, coming down my chest, you know, wet from the lake and everything. Like, this dude tore me up. And then I have to reach in as I'm sitting at the end of the deck, reach, try to move forward into the water. Thought I was going to break my back or fall back in with him. And I got to pull this 65-pound dog up. From the most vulnerable of positions, and then he's scratching me on the way back down onto the deck. So it was well worth it, man. Proud rad dad moment with my pooch over the weekend, for sure.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Dogs take most dogs anyway, especially one about the size that you're describing, Hayes. They take right to the water. That's been my experience. Like, it's usually, yes, just a little bit of skittishness, and then they're in. And then once they're in, good luck getting them out.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. It's like, do you really want your dog to be that in the water? Because they're really going to like it. And as you know, as a dog owner, when your dog really likes something, eventually it's going to become really annoying to you.
That dude took a shit this morning too in my daughter's doorway. I had all the warning signs, man. We woke up this morning getting her ready for school. He's looking at me. He's smiling. He's wagging his tail. He keeps walking towards the door. I'm half asleep, you know, trying to find my way through the kitchen, turn the lights on and get breakfast going. And I'm like, dude, relax. We'll go out in like 20 minutes, man.
Yeah, like, no.
This is our normal routine, bro, okay? Yeah. I'm not on your time. You're on Papa time, all right? Papa Berg's. I will tell you when you go out. And he has never made an accident in the apartment. And he freaking diarrhea'd from her entranceway into her room into the bathroom, man. It was, oh, God. So, you know, from being high on the good boy list, he's now on the naughty list, but whatever.
That's lake water, man. He drank too much of that lake water.
I know. He, you know, probably had too much people food and treats and snacks, you know, being thrown to him, scraps from the table on Monday also. So, whatever. Okay, let's get to, dude, we got an NCAA tournament, man. Field of 64 is set. Yeah, allegedly. It's going to happen this Friday through Monday, if necessary. For those extra games, unless the team's able to sweep their way through with a 3-0 record. Field of 64 is set. Presbyterian, Norfolk State, Grand Canyon, and New Jersey Institute of Technology all making their first appearances. NJIT, by the way, making it because the America East Tournament Championship game was canceled. And so Stony Brook was the one that got shafted on that. But NJIT, New Jersey Institute of Technology, making their first ever appearance. SEC leads the way with 9 bids. Surprise, surprise. ACC with 8. Pac-12 with 6. Big 12, Conference USA each with 4. And Indiana, who lost of 13, rightfully left out as a top 3 from the Big 10, are included in Nebraska, Michigan, and Maryland. First 4 out, Baylor, Pitt, Georgia, Ball State. The selection committee's last 4 in, Alabama, Michigan, UNC, and UNC Santa Barbara. Serber, your thoughts?
So I'll start with NJIT. Okay, let's compare them quickly, and this is not baseball related, to MIT. How is the Jersey Institute of Technology different than the Massachusetts Institute of Technology? And then we could even throw the Georgia Institute of Technology in there. I'm just curious, like, if MIT puts out some of the greatest mathematicians and, like, you know, scientists of our day, what is NJIT's big export? We designed the best concrete in the tri-state area.
Well, let's look. Let's give it a quick. I don't know if Wikipedia would be the right way here, but like just some facts on New Jersey Institute of Technology.
When you say New Jersey Institute of Technology, when you say NJIT, I just can't think but how it must be the exact opposite of MIT, like Jersey's version of Boston's world acclaimed university has just got to be insane.
So I'm not even going to pretend to try and know anything about the school itself, but like you do raise a great point. Like how do you separate these two, these institutions, these many of these Institute of Technologies, but couldn't the same argument be applied to Virginia Tech and Georgia Tech, you know, on a larger scale?
But New Jersey just hits different, right?
It does. It's got a different flair for sure. By the way, the Jersey Shore theme server, when Duke was hoisting the ACC championship trophy in Charlotte, that song was blaring.
Oh yeah.
I had never heard the Jersey Shore theme outside of the television, which is one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah, me too.
Outside of the television show itself, I had never heard it in any sort of setting, being applied anywhere.
They should have played the actual Jersey Shore one, just like have JWoww in the background. After I have sex with a guy, I will bite his freaking head off.
Oh, man. That would be awesome.
I'm looking through of the notable alumni, and it seems like the best thing they do is put out basketball and baseball players. I don't know any of these other people at all, like Mark Leiter Jr., obviously. This is the only name on this list of all the different kinds of things. But although, all right, we got Beatrice Hicks here, founder of Society of Women Engineers and a member of the National Academy of Engineering. So there's a theoretical physicist who made significant contributions to string theory. I think Jersey's bringing it. I think they're, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. The Newark version of MIT is better than the actual MIT, clearly.
It's not cheap either. I mean, in-state, you can go for $17,600, but out-of-state, $33,386 total tuition and fees to get into New Jersey Institute of Technology. They are top 10 school for return on investment, allegedly, so they say, where they want you to apply. Top-ranked public honors college, mm-hmm. top 100 national university, source their 2020 QS World University ranking, and number one nationally, according to Forbes magazine, in student economic upward mobility, whatever the hell that means.
Yeah. Hey, and you know what? They got the most beloved dean in all the country, Uncle Joey. He owns a rock quarry and a demolition business. And he can get you anything you need. I mostly spent that much time on that because there's nothing interesting about the SEC getting 9 teams in and the ACC getting 8, in my opinion. I just think, like, duh. The Big Ten, obviously, is the one that kind of stands out here, only getting 3 in. I know there is the narrative, right, is that they don't, like, Big Ten baseball is not that good or whatever. I don't think it gets a lot of eyes on it. I think they have a tough start to the season considering almost all of them have to play on the road or in very unfavorable conditions in February if they happen to play at home. But we've seen Michigan make a big run in Omaha. Like, the Big Ten is not – like, these three teams have every much as chance as the nine teams in the SEC. So I think that's going to put a chip on the shoulder of every team from the Big Ten. Nebraska, Michigan. Who's the third team from that conference?
Maryland.
They're going to have a chip on their shoulder for sure, just because they're going to think, you know, our conference got disrespected. We're disrespected because they're saying we're from a conference that's not, you know, that can't hold its own. So it'll be interesting because baseball is just one of those games where, you know, anything can happen on a football field, right? Like Appalachian State could beat Michigan, but we don't see it quite as often, you know what I mean, as we do in like a pro game where everyone's on the same level. College baseball, I really think everyone's there's much more parity than in the other major college athletic sports. So, like, yeah, all those teams from the Big Ten have every bit of a chance. On the teams that were out, Pitt had no business in, you know, they really faltered down the stretch. Georgia kind of blew their opportunity in the SEC tournament, but I'm curious on your take on that one, because you thought they might be okay, right? Like, but
so when they played LSU in what I had believed would be an elimination game in Hoover in the SEC tournament, and Georgia won that game.
Yeah.
Yet LSU gets in the field, and part of that I think is, all right, there's a huge contradiction here going on, though, with the selection committee and what the chair has said, both immediately following the reveal of the bracket with ESPN, teleconferences afterward, in terms of the RPI. Because what we learned was, we were told, or at least had thought and believed and subscribed to this theory, and it's evident because everybody is playing a different schedule. This isn't an equal playing field because of COVID this year. Some conferences are playing conference-only games, like the Big Ten, for example. So you would think maybe, hey, in any year, you cut a conference some slack, right? Or even Pitt, a team that had a 16-day COVID pause, came back and was never the same, but had impressive wins over Indiana State, Florida State, Georgia Tech, Virginia, and Miami, and 3 of 4 from North Carolina, including a win in Charlotte on Tuesday night. The Panthers won a game. Okay, and at least put themselves in contention to make it to semifinal Saturday in Charlotte. What I'm getting at, Serbs, is the top 40 teams in the RPI all got in. Mm-hmm. So the RPI did matter and was a main measuring tool for the committee. Yet, how are you able to use that relative to other conferences and other teams that are playing mostly exclusively league schedules or not as diverse a schedule as the SEC or the Big 12 or what have you? Pitt wasn't even given any sympathy for going on pause and coming back. And their ACC record overall was 17-18, a game under 500. RPI was 50, so it was outside that 40 threshold. But, you know, the top 40 teams all getting in with an RPI inside of 40 shows you that, you know, the committee just looked at the RPI, used as a cheat sheet, and just said, okay, all these teams are in, and they created the cutoff point right there. But with that said, like, LSU – sure, they won a series in Oxford over Ole Miss this year, and the committee valued that. I get it. But the SEC, you know, the question was, a team under 500 in the SEC, five games under 500, how are you going to look at them? LSU was 13-17. Alabama was 12-17, and Alabama got in.
Yeah.
If you ask me, Pittsburgh should have been in over Alabama based on their series wins. Like, I don't even think – Alabama, let's pull up their schedule. How many SEC – series wins does Alabama have? I want to say off the top of my head, two, and that includes the Auburn series. They dropped 2 out of 3 to Vanderbilt. They only played two games, or two LSU, I beg your pardon. They only played two against Vandy, lost both. They swept Missouri. Okay, Missouri wasn't even close to being in the discussion. Kentucky lost 2 out of 3. I'm working backwards. Took 2 out of 3 from Auburn. Okay, they did sweep Texas A&M. All right, but 12-17, again, five games under 500 in the league, including getting swept by Ole Miss and dropping 2 out of 3 of Arkansas. They did beat the Hogs 16-1. So maybe that game was the moneymaker that put Alabama in over the field over a team like Georgia. But Serbs, Georgia, do you remember? They took 2 out of 3 from Vandy. They were the first team, okay, to shake up the SEC and put Vanderbilt on alert and really show their vulnerabilities, which have exposed themselves quite a few times here recently. Vandy wasn't even the least bit interested in the SEC tournament last week, much like Texas Tech and the Big 12. And that's a whole nother thing. Now we got Texas Tech getting in as an 8 national seed over Notre Dame. Like, I don't understand how the committee landed on some of these teams the way that they did. And it seems like the RPI, unrightfully and unfairly so, was used as more of a tool than it should have been in this unique year.
Yeah, you know, specifically talking about Georgia, we talked at the beginning of the season, I guess it was the midpoint of the season, that they had a critical stretch coming up, right? And I said they only needed to take one game from Vandy. They wound up winning that series, taking 2 out of 3. And I said they needed to do that for about a month, and they did. They took 2 out of 3 against Kentucky. They took 2 out of 3 against Mizzou. I think these Auburn series loss stings even more now, because you put that in, you make that a series win too, which they probably should have won that series. And it's a I think you look at it a little differently, because it takes one of those series losses away, and instead of losing, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 straight series to wrap the season, you only lose 3 straight series, you know, and then you go into the SEC and take a game against LSU, and then that's probably enough to put you in over the top. Now, the RPI thing, yeah, it's egregious. So I think one benefit we're getting, to switch gears a little bit, from the college football playoff, do you feel like the committee members watch the games? Like, watch all the games in the top 25 teams that get ranked when they start releasing their rankings? Do you feel that they watch all or at least a majority of the games of each team? Or do you think that's just lip service?
I want to believe they do, but I think it's more lip service than anything. Maybe in the final month, 3 weeks of the season, I think they're watching every single, I would say 75 to 85% of the plays they're watching for those top six teams to 10 maybe, if they need to. But we really only know there's only, you know, there might only be 2 teams outside of the top 4 that really are strongly in contention at that point in the season anyway. So, like, it's easier for them to keep up with in the final 3 weeks to 4 weeks of the year. Games that are being played in September. Now, Clemson, Georgia, September 4th?
Yeah.
You better believe every freaking committee member better be watching that game start to finish without any sort of interruption. On repeat.
Right. But are they going to watch Clemson, Wake? And I think that's your point. No offense to Wake Forest, which is a football school. But yeah, like, so I just wonder, I'm like, do they have an impossible task? There's a lot of 64 baseball teams that you got to get into this out of, you know, 300, 400. And games are not super easily accessible. The committee, the selection committee, they're as informed, if not less informed, than we are. You know what I mean? Like, they're as equipped to make these decisions as we are. So, I think they did just use the RPI as a cheat sheet, which is unfortunate. And it bears fruit when you look at the fact that there's only 3 Big Ten teams, right? Like, as far as I remember, they didn't play an out-of-conference schedule at all in the Big Ten, did they?
It was strictly all Big Ten games. And Georgia serves is 41 in RPI. They're right there at the cutoff. Nebraska at 42, Dallas Baptist at 43. Those were your 2 automatic bids. By the way, Missouri Valley getting 2 teams. Indiana State also a 30-win team, joining Dallas Baptist. Nebraska winning the Big Ten regular season, 31-12. And then Baylor at 44. Florida State, Georgia Tech, North Carolina, 3 of the 8 ACC teams that got in are 45, 46, and 47. FSU, Georgia Tech, and North Carolina. Now, the Yellow Jackets were the 2 seed in Charlotte this past week, but still 4.5 games behind what Notre Dame was in winning and running away with the ACC regular season. And then Ball State at 48, Pitt is at 50.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like, so, you know, Maryland, one of the teams that got in on the Big Ten, they're ranked 60th in RPI. They got in mainly because, like, they're thinking, well, we got to put a couple Big Ten teams in, right? Like, they're just going down the list. Like, I need to look at the RPI real quick and see, are there any Big Ten teams that fell in between that 40 and 60 that didn't get in? It doesn't look like there are. So
the series went over Michigan in the second to last weekend, the sweep of Purdue before that. I mean, Maryland's been on a tear, sweeping through Minnesota, taking games from Iowa, who was flirting at one point with NCAA tournament contention, Northwestern, a sweep of Ohio State in middle April. But, I mean, Maryland's been playing great ball. They got off to a slower start, but they turned it on at the right time.
They were rewarded
for it.
Yeah, they're a really good team. Michigan is a really good team. Michigan's ranked 88th in RPI. So, like, if they are measuring it by the RPI that much, what chance did the Big Ten really have? Indiana's 106th.
Yeah, no, I
you know,
I think
like,
the three
of course,
teams.
Of course they didn't get in. You know what I mean? So it's like, I it's unfortunate that they went that route, considering the RPI is not reliable when you don't have a commonality amongst all the schedules.
Yeah, the big brand teams like a Maryland or a Michigan, a big conference, Big mm-hmm. Ten, they're getting the nod. There's favoritism shown to those schools, and this is where it comes full circle when you look at the teams that got snubbed. Like, yeah, there was Pitt in Georgia, but Cerber, there was also Long Beach State, who had won 15 of 17 games. Yeah. They didn't have any fall ball because of COVID, and their season began almost a month later. It was March 10th, and they started the year by losing 3 out of 4 to Hawaii. Okay, so they got off to a very slow start, which was understandable because they weren't able to practice, they weren't able to play until later in the year, but they won 15 of 17, the Dirtbags. Ball State, another team that was left out, 38-18 during the regular season. They own a series split with the 5th overall national seed, Arizona. They went down to Tucson and split with the Wildcats. They also took 2 out of 3 against Kentucky, an SEC team. I know Kentucky's not on the field, but Ball State, during COVID, showed the ability to still go out and schedule, put marquee opponents on their schedule, finished 2 games under 40 wins for this season, and still the Cardinals, second best team in the MAC, don't get in. Like, that is a crying shame that schools, the smaller schools like that, aren't rewarded for their successes and how they're playing down the stretch. And instead, it's the big brand name like Michigan or North Carolina that's going to be among the last 4 in. That's not right.
Yeah, I get your point. I get your point there. But this is an imperfect, you know, it's an imperfect system. And I think you can walk away from the baseball field feeling way different than you do from, like, the March Madness basketball field. Like, it seems to work better there for some reason. Whereas here, I think it is because there is so much parity across the country and because so many of these smaller schools are legitimate contenders to win the national championship. You know, I'm looking at you, Coastal Carolina, a couple years ago. So, like, or, you know, and even you hate to call ECU a smaller school, but they can win the whole damn thing. You know, so, like, yeah, there's something to be said, like, give Ball State a chance. If they, you know, if they could split against Arizona, imagine what they could do in a regional and super regional, you know, on their way to Omaha. So it's just, it's unfortunate, man. Like, I don't think there's a way to do it completely right. And then, I mean, you look at a team like San Diego, literally 1 game back from the Zags. If they sweep the Zags, they're in. You know, so it's like,
oh, and they knocked Gonzaga from hosting contention this past weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, they beat them up.
Yeah. So, like, across the board, the smaller schools are going to catch the snub, and they're going to catch it even more so because of using the RPI. But I do think it's interesting. Like, yeah, Michigan's getting in. They're the last one getting in. But potentially, you know, maybe more teams should have gotten in from the Big Ten. But I don't know.
I'm happy UC Santa Barbara got the nod as one of the last 4 in, joining UC Irvine, the Big West automatic qualifier for their regular season standings. But UCSB, the Gauchos, will join the Anteaters on the Big West. Big West has always had some great representation. UCSB, I think most recently, was there in Omaha before any other Big West team, the most recent Big West squad to be in Omaha here recently. So they are among the last 4 in. The 16 host positions are Arkansas at number 1, Texas 2, Tennessee 3, Vanderbilt 4, Arizona 5, TCU, Mississippi State, and Texas Tech rounding out the top 8 national seeds. So if those seeds all advance are those teams. They will be hosting the Super Regional. And things can get a little weird because, like, I'm going to pose a hypothetical to you, and I wonder what your response will be. I actually texted our buddy Aaron Fitt with D1 Baseball last night for some clarification. But just continuing our 16 host spots, 9-seeded Stanford, 10-seeded Notre Dame. So they did do themselves some harm in Charlotte this week. Not enough. And again, the committee not valuing the fact that they played an ACC-only schedule or taking that into consideration and just the disparity or how much they were able to control and dominate that league, winning by 4.5 games and only playing 4 out-of-conference games. It's like the Fighting Irish were punished, okay, and losing 14-1 on semifinal Saturday that was on Friday, with a chance to get into the semifinal round of the ACC tournament against Virginia, was the death knell for the Fighting Irish. 11th-rated Old Dominion, 12-seeded Ole Miss, 13-seeded ECU, 14-seeded Oregon, 15-seeded Florida, and 16-seeded Louisiana Tech. Some epic, epic battles between Louisiana Tech and Southern Miss in CUSA. Serb, CUSA tournament lived up to all of the hype. I told you it'd be the most consequential tournament. It was the most fun. Southern Miss and Louisiana Tech played 3 times. In fact, Southern Miss was, I think, 9 outs away from sending the Bulldogs packing at their home stadium, the Love Shack, out of the loser's bracket after defeating them. I think it was the winner's side. Louisiana Tech had played their way back into a game with Southern Miss early Saturday, needing to beat them twice. It was 6-0 Southern Miss in the 6th inning. Louisiana Tech came back to win 11-10 in extra innings and then beat them again in the 2nd game to face Old Dominion, who went undefeated, and Old Dominion secures the CUSA. They also are a traveling host. They'll be in Columbia. But back to your point, Serber, about the committee. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. This time of the year, you're splitting hairs. You're trying to compare teams. You know, who knows what's going through the mind of the committee? We're all going to be armchair quarterbacks when it comes to evaluating these things after the fact. But my man, Notre Dame not getting in as a national seed, like, I do not – that one makes me more irate, I think, than anything, because you put Texas Tech in as an 8. Sure, Texas Tech took a series from TCU – took a series from Texas. I get all that. Texas at 2. TCU wins the Big 12 tournament, defeating Oklahoma State. So TCU is in as the number 5 seed. But, like, it is downright tragic that the Irish are not in as a top 8 when they were in almost every single projection this entire last couple of months. And then they lose a game 14-1. They win the ACC, though, by 4.5 games, and the committee is showing them no love. Plus, they send Michigan into their regional.
It's confusing that the ACC has the second most amount of teams in this tournament at 8. Yet, they don't have a single team in the top 8 national seeds. The one team they have of the 16 seeds and hosts is Notre Dame. So it's, so they think that all these teams are worthy of getting in, but they don't think they're very good because Notre Dame dominated the conference, but yet is not a top 8, to your point. So it's, and they, like you said, they put Michigan in their regional, which was adds insult to injury. It doesn't make any sense to me. It makes zero sense to me. I guess it only makes sense if I look at it from the fact that they don't really value they don't think the ACC is that good. But then that doesn't make sense because they put 8 teams in. So they're almost like contradicting themselves to a certain extent here. I don't get it. I do think it's a shame. We thought Notre Dame couldn't do themselves any harm, and we were wrong. I think it's a... Yeah, it's an injustice, at least.
Notre Dame gets UConn also, who came in winning 25 of 30 games into the Big East tournament, and for the first time ever, they've won the Big East regular season and the Big East tournament championship. So you've got one of the 3 hottest teams, okay, in all of college baseball, that being UConn. VCU is a 2 seed. They're going to Starkville, and they've won 21 games in a row. And then you have the Dukies, who have won 12 straight, including the ACC tournament crown this past weekend. But the Notre Dame regional in South Bend, Central Michigan, whom Notre Dame played once and beaten this year, but Chip's got an ace You know, all it takes is one guy, right, to get got in a 1-4 matchup. And then UConn and Michigan also playing in that regional. So, yeah, man, it's like I said, there's contradicting takes and evidence that has been shown by the committee here. But, you know, is it an impossible job? I mean, it's not a job I've signed up for. Texas Tech, though, they have representation on that committee, too. So, you know, anytime your school is going to have representation on a committee, there's going to be a little bit of extra love, you know, that's going to be shown to you. Speaking of love, LSU getting into, by the way, serves the Paul Menary announcement that he's retiring after 15 years in Baton Rouge. Tell me that man does not know what he's doing in making that announcement 2 days before the brackets to be revealed. Like, you talk about a sympathy, lifetime achievement award type thing. Like, all right, coach, we're going to give you one last dance. We're going to give you the swan song right here. LSU is getting in. Paul Menary, we're going to ship you out west for only the second time in his career. Let's see what you can go do in Eugene.
I think he's got a legit shot to come out and play in a super regional, to come out of that regional in Eugene. Zags have not been playing great down the stretch, neither has Oregon, really. You know, they've been playing okay, but they lost 2 out of 3 to Stanford, and they barely took 2 out of 3 against Cal. They needed a 1-run win in the getaway game on Saturday to do it. So, like, LSU's got every chance to come out of that super regional and have a, you know, you're right. It's probably a sympathy bid. They probably stole it from Georgia, who beat them straight up on a neutral field. But, you know, it's a legend calling it quits, and it'll be interesting to see if his team can make a run, because, you know, if anything's going to fire those players up too, it's, you know, playing for our guy. But that's a big job opening too. Anytime a job comes open in the SEC, that'll be a big job opening. So it'll be interesting to pay attention to some of these smaller schools throughout the tournament to see if a candidate emerges or if it's going to be somebody that's already on staff at LSU.
You know what I'd be super interested in from a power coach, a power league, to see if a guy makes the jump. Similar to what, and I'm going to draw a parallel here, Chris Lemonis left Indiana, went to Mississippi State. How about Eric Bakich, Michigan? Would he leave? I think you absolutely would. Leaving Michigan to go to LSU? I mean, LSU is got to be a top 3, top 5 baseball job. I mean, there's only so many of these jobs that are, you know, you drop everything you're doing, okay? You don't even ask how much or what you're getting paid or any of those things. You go. Because it's LSU and it's Baton Rouge.
I think Missouri's the only job in the SEC that isn't like that. You know what I mean? I think every single job in the SEC, if it comes open, no matter where you are other than Missouri, you should move to the SEC and take that job. Now, maybe there's some exceptions to the rule here and there, like a UNC or a Florida State, you know. But for the most part, or Texas, but for the most part, like, yeah, leave, go to the SEC. You're just going to have, he would have so much more in resources, so much more of an elevated profile, as a coach. He's going to get a pay rate. Like, there's so much, unless he just happens to love Ann Arbor.
Michigan, man.
Yeah. I mean, there's no reason. I will say, though, that Eugene Regional, we will be robbed if we don't see Michigan Central Michigan face off at some point. Like, I hope it doesn't fall in a way in which they don't get to hook up in a meaningful game. But, like, you'd love to see, like, an elimination bracket or an elimination game between those two, between Michigan and Central Michigan. But, yeah, no, LSU job would be a good move for him and really anyone in the country who's not already in the SEC.
Yeah, that would be the South Bend Regional with Michigan and Central Michigan. But Paul Menary,
I thought that was in Eugene. My bad.
No. 15 years in 39 seasons overall as a head coach, 15 of those coming in Baton Rouge. Just the support has been pouring out, as you can imagine. I mean, I've spent time down there family had season tickets, you know, all that. I've been to numerous, numerous games. And Paul Maneri, you know, it's a pressure cooker. You know, he's a very fatherly figure, just very, very kind, very genuine. But, you know, at times, you know, as is the case everywhere in the SEC, it just means more. Sometimes that heat can be turned up a little too much. And after the amount of time that he's been spent down there, not to say he will never admit it. He will never say that he's felt ill will towards anybody during his time. But, you know, you get to a point in your career and your age, and the COVID season really puts things in perspective. Serber, I think we've seen that on the basketball level with Roy Williams at North Carolina, Lon Kruger at Oklahoma. You go through the year and you navigate all of the challenges that have come with the pandemic, and then all of a sudden you get to season's end, you take a 30,000-foot view, you take inventory on what you've been able to accomplish, and you say, yeah, you know what? I'm good. I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
So I think that's the case for the 63-year-old Maneri. 1,501 wins. 1,501. Started at St. Thomas, 6 years at Air Force, 12 years at Notre Dame, 15 years at LSU. Seventh all-time among NCAA Division I baseball coaches in career wins. He's got the 2009 National Championship to his credit. He also has the 2017 runner-up finish when they had lost to Florida. So, yeah, that is a job. That and Texas A&M, two SEC openings. Be fascinated to see what happens there, and especially if Bakich is interested at all, and maybe he could be poached. And he's a guy who spent time as an assistant with Tim Corbin, remember, at Vanderbilt, which is what made that last national championship that much more fun in 2019 when it was Bakich against Corbin. It'll be fascinating to watch that continuing to spin. I think that there's over, you know, 20 coaching openings close to it at this point. So the carousel is moving, that is for sure. Some of those bid thieves, Serbs, just to, you know, shine a light on maybe how some of those snubs or those bubble teams that didn't make their way onto the right side of the bubble, how they were left out of the field. Jacksonville, the Dolphins, during the regular season, they went 16-32, 3-15 in the A-Sun, Serbs, 3-15, yet they find a way to get through Liberty and win the Atlantic Sun. They are the A-Sun automatic qualifier. Liberty gets in as an at-large. They're heading to Knoxville, where Wright State and Duke will be the two, and Tennessee also there, of course, as the one. Ryder winning the MAAC. Fairfield going down, but Fairfield still getting into the tournament. 37-3, I believe, was their final tally. So we'll still see the Stags in the field. Fairfield will be heading to the Austin Regional. They'll be in with Texas, Arizona State, and then Southern. And then Presbyterian out of the Big South, making their first ever NCAA tournament appearance. Cool storyline for them, too. That's where Tim Corbin started his coaching career. And Presbyterian is going to Nashville to take on Vanderbilt. Georgia Tech there is a 2. Indiana State also there as a 3. But Serbs, the Dolphins, 3-15 during A-Sun tournament play. I mean, I don't know if we've ever – I don't know what the worst conference record we've ever seen for an AQ in the NCAA tournament in baseball or even college basketball. I'd be curious. But, like, man, that's got to be near the top.
Yeah, that's awful. It's absolutely terrible. I mean, but that's the way it works. So,
that's the beauty of the tournament, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's like that's the win and just win, baby. Like Al Davis would say, just win, baby. Like when it gets to tournament time in college baseball, college basketball, anytime where there's like a big automatic qualifier tournament thing, just win, baby. It's one of the reasons. And those sports are different than football. Like, we can get away with it, I feel like, in baseball and basketball a little bit easier. But, like, you know, if Akron happens to get the AQ for the NCAA football tournament, it's like, even though they went, you know, 2-10, but they won, like, some sort of weird, you know, MAC tournament, which I now want to happen since I've made this up in my head, it would be a bloodbath. But Jacksonville's got a chance, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, they got just as good a chance as anybody else.
Hey, everybody is 0-0 right now. So, yeah, good on Jacksonville. They'll be a 4 seed heading to Old Dominion. Serbs, I want to go through each quadrant Just real quick, like, I'll rattle off all the matchups. We'll go through all 16 spots, and you can just give your reflections four times over. So basically, we'll pot it out as a super, and you can tell me maybe what stands out, what's most challenging, what might be the easiest path to Omaha. I can riff as well. But before we do that, Old Dominion, like, round of applause for them, man. They go through the CUSA tournament unscathed. They'll have a matchup with those Dolphins, the aforementioned 16-32 Jacksonville Dolphins, a 1-4 matchup in Columbia, and South Carolina will be the 2, Virginia the 3. That's a very interesting regional, for sure. But, like, Serbs, ODU, like, the committee, if they did anything right, and it would have been blasphemous if ODU, after winning Conference USA, that tournament the way they did, didn't get a number one. But the fact that they didn't ship them out to Spokane, Serber, yeah, and instead kept them kind of close, sending them to Columbia.
Yeah, no, that was cool. It could have been – I don't think – do you think they would have made them a host in the Zags park?
I think
they would have done that?
Yeah, for sure. They would have gone to Spokane as well. I think it came down to either Spokane or Columbia.
I'm glad they chose Columbia.
I think with Gonzaga, you know, dropping the series against San Diego the way that they had this past weekend, they just kind of took themselves out. It made the decision a little bit more easier for the committee. And South Carolina too, you know, they went one and done. They got railed by Alabama in their first game in Hoover. So
yeah.
If you're ODU, it's like, okay, great, you're hosting. You're in Columbia. You're not too far. You're going to Founders Park. But, like, hey, guess what? You're going to have to deal with the SEC's South Carolina Gamecocks, yeah, as a 2 in their own home ballpark. And then you got to get past a Virginia team that just played in the ACC semifinals and is also playing their best baseball of the year. So, you know, good on you, ODU, but you're going to have to earn it from here on out.
Yeah, and there's another – the fact that South Carolina was quickly eliminated from the SEC baseball tournament, there is something to be said. Like, we talk about every year, these teams, like, you know, it's a grind to win the SEC baseball tournament. It's a grind to win the ACC baseball tournament because you're playing all week long. Sometimes there's lingering effects the next week in the regional. Could there be a lingering effect for South Carolina just being super fresh and, like, you know, having a chance to reflect for a little bit longer on, you know, how things didn't go the way they wanted them to in Hoover? That is tough, tough regional. I know Jacksonville's in it, who's a scrub team who got in on an AQ with one of the worst automatic qualifier records ever, if not the worst. But Virginia, you'd been talking about all year long as an elite team, and South Carolina has clearly made it back to the elite level. And, yeah, Old Dominion is the real freaking deal. They won the Conference USA tournament, which, you know, given what was at stake, like you said, was, you know, the most consequential one and maybe the toughest one to win too. So that's a regional to keep your eye on. That being said, I think whoever wins that regional comes out of the Fort Worth Super if we wind up playing in Fort Worth. Like, TCU was awful last week. McNeese State, I couldn't tell you anything about. Dallas Baptist is an AQ, right? And then Oregon State, you know, I think that's probably the favorite to come out of that regional, even though they're not the top seed. What say you on moving up to the other side of that super regional side to Fort Worth?
Yeah, I like DBU, but I think TCU is going to end up coming out of that and probably going to punch their ticket to Omaha. It's been a couple of years. I mean, it's been a couple of years for everyone, but the Horned Frogs, I think, are in a good position there. Escape Oregon State might, you know, that's tasty for sure. Oregon State and DBU. But I like the Horned Frogs coming out there. Old Dominion, it would be a phenomenal story, man, if they're able to survive Columbia, given what they've been able to accomplish and coming off, you know, the radar. They were on nobody's radar and just appearing and wrecking through CUSA the way that they had and then winning the tournament. And we knew CUSA was going to be a four-team, four-bid league for really most, if not all, of this season. It was pretty clear early on, you know, in early April that was going to be the case, end of March. So I just don't know if ODU can escape the wrath of Virginia or even a South Carolina. And like you said, rest can do them well. So I do like TCU coming out there.
Me. I misspoke on TCU. They won the Big 12 tournament. I was thinking of Texas Tech,
yeah,
who was awful last week in the tournament.
Yeah, they limped into the tournament, but then turned it on. And TCU, I think, was, you know, maybe falling out of that top eight national seed picture, perhaps. But they firmly put themselves right back in at six behind Arizona at five. All right, we've given you the top 16 national seeds. I'm just going to burn through all the matchups. And, Serbs, you can give me some thoughts on how the super regional picture might set up. And then I got a hypothetical for you on how things might get wacky if the top seeds don't advance and how those host sites might change among the 16 that we have for super. So, top left quadrant, Arkansas, number one overall seed. They'll have New Jersey Institute of Technology. Northeastern is the three seed. Nebraska is the two. I think it's a crime that Nebraska, the Big Ten's top team, is going to Fayetteville. Louisiana Tech is the one seed in the Ruston Regional, 16th overall national seed. They'll take on four-seeded Rider on Friday. Three-seeded Alabama will meet two-seeded NC State. And then below that, still top left quadrant, number one seed Stanford, they're the ninth overall seed. So if chalk were to advance or align itself, it could be either Stanford or Texas Tech, who got in as the eighth overall national seed, taking on Arkansas. But for Stanford, they'll take on four-seeded North Dakota State, three-seeded Nevada, two-seeded UC Irvine. Texas Tech has four-seeded Army, three-seeded North Carolina, and two-seeded UCLA fill out that Lubbock regional. Serbs, Texas Tech, UCLA, North Carolina, and Army, that might be the most aesthetically pleasing regional that we have on the board.
Yeah, I like it. And, you know, for our What's Brewing guys, you know, Bruins have a very good chance to come out of that, but it's going to be tough. North Carolina got hot in the season down the stretch. I need to take a look at their at what they did, but I seem to remember them kind of being middling all throughout the season, and then once we hit, like, mid-April, maybe it was, they just kind of exploded and got really good. I guess it was beginning of May they got kind of hot. So that'll be an interesting one to see how it plays out, but, yeah, aesthetically, like, we're talking about uniforms and just colors, like, the battle of the Columbia Blues between North Carolina and UCLA. Give it to me. Let's just put them both in powder blue. See what happens, right?
Yeah, I know. Absolutely, for sure.
Give them. Let's put them in powder blues against one another, and let's put Texas Tech and Army both in black. Let's go, baby.
It would be hot out in Lubbock, but no, I think that uniform wise. The brands, too, Texas Tech, North Carolina, UCLA, and then you throw in a Service Academy and Army. Like, let's go, dude. Like, that is a fun – that is going to look really good on your television this weekend.
At the law.
Yes. Super-wise, Texas Tech is a mainstay, it seems. Stanford hasn't lost a Pac-12 series all year. I think they should have been considered for the 8th seed over Texas Tech, much like Notre Dame. I would have been happier if Stanford got it versus Texas Tech, if it were not Notre Dame. So I like the Cardinal, and I like the Hogs meeting in a super. We don't need to give College World Series picks at this point, but I'm going to take – I like Stanford and Texas Tech to meet in that super, and then Arkansas and Louisiana Tech with the Hogs moving on.
So I just let's play devil's advocate here. Let's say UCLA and UC Irvine both make it out of those regionals. They each win the regionals, and there's a super. Who's hosting?
Okay, so this is the question I was going to pose, and I texted Aaron Fitt at D1 Baseball last night asking about Duke and LSU. I'll frame the question to how you're posing it. They don't know. They're not clear. So does UCLA, will this regional be moved to, like, I'm trying to think. Like, you got to look at one of these top 16 seed. Let's say Arizona lost. Okay, this is the easier way to put it. Let's say Arizona got upset. That creates an opening for Tucson, right? So if UCLA wins and comes out of Lubbock as a two, and then, you know, UC Irvine or Nevada or North Dakota, any one of those teams somehow defeats Stanford, is it possible that UCLA can then go host at Tucson to get closer back home, closer out west? You feel me? There are no answers to that. So I think there can be a shuffling of sorts. Now, geographically, if there isn't a regional host site that becomes available because of a top seed losing, or you're not able to shuffle it in a way where you can get UCLA closer to their home in South Cali, then yeah, that would likely be played in Lubbock with UCLA hosting a UC Irvine, for example, the following week.
Right. Which, in that, if that scenario plays out, what they want to happen is for Stanford to be not an option, right?
Well,
Do they just play it at Stanford? Then
Stanford would probably make the most sense. I mean,
because they're already hosting they're already hosting the regional the week before. That would be my guess. They're just going to play it in the Bay Area.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's more obvious because it's in California. It's in your own state. So if Stanford were to lose and UCLA were to advance, I think it makes all the sense in the world because that host site comes available. It comes open, and the Bruins and whomever can just host there. Same thing, like look at North Carolina. If North Carolina came out, and this is what I was asking Aaron Fitt about with Duke, let's say Duke wins Knoxville and LSU wins Eugene and ECU loses Greenville.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, then all of a sudden Greenville's open. Duke is seated better as a 2. LSU is a 3 in Eugene. So how about Duke hosts LSU in Greenville for the 2 out of 3 super? Makes all the sense in the world, right?
Right. But will that happen?
Lot of hypotheticals there. Yeah. So that's going to be fascinating to see how things play out as we shuffle and recalibrate and move on through the super regional round.
Yeah.
Okay, bottom left quadrant, top seed Arizona taking on 4 seed of Grand Canyon. That's travesty. Those two schools have already played this year. and Grand Canyon making their first ever appearance in the state of Arizona. Like, it's a lot of house money, man. That's a lot of mojo. I can see Grand Canyon moving on. Still relatively new in terms of their program itself. UC Santa Barbara, the 3, Oklahoma State, the 2. That's your Tucson Regional. Top-seeded Ole Miss, 4-seeded SEMO, Southeast Missouri State. And Oxford, 3-seeded Florida State, 2-seeded Southern Miss. The Seminoles are a 3-seed.
Yeah.
That's spicy. And then below that, to finish out the bottom left quadrant, top-seeded ECU and Norfolk State, the 4, Maryland, the 3, to the Charlotte in Greenville, the Charlotte 49ers. Top-seeded Vanderbilt in Nashville, taking on 4-seeded Presbyterian, 3-seeded Indiana State, 2-seeded Georgia Tech. What do you think about that bottom left quadrant, Serbs?
I think Ole Miss, what did you do to upset someone for it to turn out that way? And I could maybe say the same for ECU. Theirs isn't quite as difficult, but Ole Miss is going to, like, they get Southeast Missouri State to tip it off, and then it just gets even harder from there. Especially with it being in Oxford, if Southern Miss has a chance to play Ole Miss in the winner's bracket in that second game of the regional, look out. That place is going to be lit because Ole Miss is going to sell it out, and then Southern Miss fans are going to be at the gates, like, trying to tear them down to get in. I hope we get to see that. Even if we don't, Ole Miss-Florida State's going to be a great matchup. I would say Southeast Missouri State pulls the short straw in that one, unfortunately. For them, I like where you're going. I like where your head's at with Arizona and Grand Canyon. Wouldn't it be wild to see Grand Canyon come in as a 4 in that regional and win it in Arizona? That would be very cool. And you know, that is a weak pod to me. I haven't watched much Arizona baseball this year, but the Pac-12. I think the top teams you could throw them up in the air and they could fall anyway at any point. Personally, separating UCLA and Arizona, I'm gonna have a hard time doing that based on what I've seen. Same with Stanford. So, like, that's the one where I'm probably rooting for chaos for the feel good story. Then in Nashville, Vandy has a cakewalk. Like, I don't, Tech does not scare me at all. I would think Vandy's gonna run right through there, use their 3 arms, and call it a day. And then East Carolina's got a tough one, in Greenville, getting Charlotte, who easily could have hosted, and Maryland. I mentioned earlier, all the Big Ten teams having probably a chip on their shoulder. Even though, to your point, maybe they shouldn't, because maybe they shouldn't even be in because a smaller school should have gotten in over them. But, I like ECU in that regional to come out, but look out for Charlotte. They've been tough this year. They didn't really bring it in the Conference USA tournament, but I like that one. I like East Carolina and Vandy to be playing in Nashville when all is said and done there. And then, yeah, it's impossible to predict the Oxford Regional. That's going to be one to really keep your eye on, because I think we're going to have some good ball games.
So FSU as a three is incredibly scary mm-hmm. in Oxford. Like, you're right. That is Murderer's Row. That might be the most challenging regional, I think, for sure. Remember the last time Florida State was in this position, the last time we had a tournament, okay, 2019, yeah. FSU swept LSU in the Baton Rouge Regional in their 42nd consecutive NCAA tournament appearance. So that's 43 in a row now for the Noles. That was the Mike Martin swan song.
That was the Dogs, wasn't it? Didn't they take down the Dogs?
No, it was LSU. They went to Baton Rouge and beat LSU 6-4 and 5-4 in 2019.
Oh, in the Super, yes. They beat Georgia in the Regional as a three. That year.
Yes, you are correct. And could we get the same thing at LSU this year, you know, with Paul Maneri, similar to what Florida State was able to administer and do to the Tigers? And ECU, yeah, I like ECU too, man. I mean, Charlotte did themselves no favors. They did that to themselves, going 0-for in the CUSA tournament, not really being competitive. They took themselves out of hosting, but East Carolina is still looking to get over that super regional hump, get into the College World Series for the first time ever. 2 years ago, they were just straight walloped by Louisville, 14-1 and 12-0 when they made it to the Supers after they came out of the Greenville Regional. I do like Vandy to cruise as well, so Vandy and ECU will be nice. Southern Miss and Ole Miss last playing in a regional in 2007. That would be pretty cool, man. But the way Florida State performed in the ACC tournament has me a little worried. So I'll take the Golden Eagles and Ole Miss, with Ole Miss surviving and getting out of that one against Grand Canyon. If I'm gonna power rank non-number one seed Serbs, and I'm going to look at my favorite two, my favorite three, and my favorite four, I'm going to show some ACC bias with my two, with Duke. I'm going to show some ACC bias with my three in Virginia. But my four, I think the strongest four of the field and the most, I think, able to pull off a stunning upset and get to the Super Regional round is Grand Canyon by far. So I'll stick to my guns there. All right, top right quadrant, Austin Regional, top seed Texas, four-seeded Southern, three-seeded Fairfield, two-seeded Arizona State. And then Florida, who is the 15th national seed, they'll host South Florida, who got in from the AAC, Serbs. So the American Athletic Conference was a two-bid league. ECU lost day one, had to come out of the loser's bracket, ultimately couldn't pull it off. And then South Alabama, the Sun Belt automatic qualifier, and Miami, the two. Right where it all started, Florida and Miami, who played earlier this year, are going to meet again in Gainesville, likely. And then Notre Dame, the 10th overall national seed, the one hosting Central Michigan, the four, Michigan and UConn, the 3-2, and then Mississippi State, the 7th overall national seed. So Starkville and South Bend paired together here. Samford, the four, Campbell, the three, and VCU is the two. I think Mississippi State, Serber, has the easiest path of anyone to get to Omaha, certainly in their own respective region. It's a cakewalk. There's no other Power Five competition, one of only two regionals, Stanford being the other, where there's just one Power Five school. Now, Mississippi State got run ruled twice in Hoover last week. Again, cause for concern, another disinterested team in the SEC tournament. Mm-hmm. But, like, my goodness, you're rewarding a team who probably you could have excused as being left out of the top eight after the way they performed in Hoover. And then you're giving them VCU, Campbell, and Samford? Like, come on.
Yeah, easy
no
road.
No disrespect.
Yeah. Easy road for them. Like, they're over there pointing and laughing at Ole Miss right now, their rival. I don't get it, but whatever. They're gonna cakewalk through that, though. Like, three games, done. And then they'll face a significant challenge from whoever comes out of that South Bend regional. I think that'll be Notre Dame. But, yeah, and then, you know, going down to Austin, I think Texas has a relatively easy road too. No disrespect to Southern, but they're technically not supposed to be there, right? Like, that's
Jackson State.
That's Jackson State spot. Arizona State, gonna give them some trouble. I don't know anything about Fairfield, so, like, that's a wild
Who?
Card.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. So I would say Texas is probably in a little bit of a similar position to Mississippi State in the Austin regional. And then the Gainesville regional is a true regional feel to me, right? Like, you got Florida, South Florida, South Alabama, and Miami, Florida. It is all, you know, it's a bubble of teams from kind of the same region. Wild.
Yeah, only one team outside of Florida in South Alabama.
But that's right there, you know?
Yeah, that, from Mobile.
Florabama Shore, baby.
Let's go. Let's get weird. And Miami took 2 out of 3 from Florida to start the year. So it all comes back to where it started. Miami beat Florida in games 2 and 3 earlier this season, 10-9 in 13 innings and 8-6 after dropping the first game to Florida 7-5. So that's another unique aspect to that regional and all the history involved between those two teams and two heavyweights for sure. So
yeah.
Looking forward to that one. That might be my favorite regional to track just because of Florida and Miami, without question.
We potentially have like a big boy super too, like as far as brand names go, if Texas is able to make it out of Austin and host the super, and then it's Florida or Miami coming out of Gainesville to go.
Yeah,
like,
great point.
Yeah, that as far as brand name, like sizzle, ESPN1 appeal, like that ticks all the boxes for me. Big 12 versus SEC. It would be, or Big 12 versus ACC, either one, and that would be awesome.
And I would I can't wait to see Notre Dame go down to Starkville, play at the Dude, and just silence.
Yeah,
15,000 fans.
Yeah, the Duty Noble Field, arguably the best environment in college baseball. I don't know who you would throw in the mix, LSU perhaps, but. The Dude has always come out strong. Is the Dude the park? I don't think they do it anymore because they've done some
left
renovations.
Left field lounge. They had the left field lounge.
Was that the cars parked out
yeah.
there? Yeah.
Yep.
That was amazing. But it's not like that anymore, right? They've done some major renovations and upgrades to the Dude in like 2018 or 2019. Yeah.
Not the same. They'll still kind of use that terminology collectively to identify themselves and who they are and attending games and sitting out there. But, yeah, it's not the same setup.
That was cool, though. People just – there's nothing more redneck in SEC baseball than just a bunch of people in their truck bed trying to catch.
But the smokers are still there, you know, just – the wildness of the fans, the sheer amount of them, and their enthusiasm and energy. But now they got like luxurious like suites and apartment style like things out in center field and left field. I mean, it's the renovations are insane for sure. TCU, the number one seed in the Fort Worth regional, obviously 6th national seed. This is the bottom right quadrant. They'll have McNeese State the 4, Oregon State is the 2. They'll take on 3-seeded Dallas Baptist, and the Fort Worth regional is paired with the Columbia Regional, which features top-seeded Old Dominion and 4-seeded Jacksonville. They'll meet on Friday. Then 2-seeded South Carolina, 3-seeded Virginia. Eugene and Knoxville are the final 2 regionals. Oregon, the 1, taking on Central Connecticut State. LSU and 2-seeded Gonzaga in the 3-2 matchup. And then Tennessee, the Vols, the Knoxville Regional. Tennessee comes in with the 3 national seed. They'll have Wright State, who legitimately could have been considered as a 3 seed. And then Liberty is the 3, taking on 2-seeded Duke. Blue Devils, again, winners of 12 straight. So Eugene and Knoxville are paired, and Columbia and Fort Worth are paired. Your final reflections on the NCAA tournament bracket and those four regional sites.
Tennessee, good on them for making it to the mountaintop. They're good at baseball somehow for the first year ever. But they're... Yeah, if Duke knocks off Liberty and you know Tennessee, we would expect to beat Wright State. If Duke comes in on a Baker's dozen streak, I wouldn't want to be in the way of that wrecking ball. Like Duke has looked tough, and they won the ACC tournament 1-0. Correct? Like on the mound, they are just throwing gas, getting it done in the field, and then. I like South Carolina to come out of Columbia, even though they're technically not the 1 there. And TC, I skipped the Eugene portion here. I do like LSU, I think, to kind of surprise people as the 3 and come out and have a, you know, keep the fairy tale going for Maneri. And I think in Fort Worth, you know, who knows? That I think Oregon State or TCU. You'd give the advantage to TCU, given that they played very well last week in the Big 12 tournament.
All right, man. I will go TCU. I want Old Dominion to keep the good vibes going, although I'm with you. You know, Virginia's who I like most as a three. So, you know, as much as I want to see ODU advance, I can't pick against my Cavaliers. I've been picking them for most of this year since their turnaround began. So Virginia and TCU, that'll be super fun in Fort Worth. And then Oregon, that regional in Eugene, I'm with you on LSU. The last dance, the swan song for Paul Maneri, will advance into a super regional round as his career comes to a conclusion. And then I'm going with the Dukies. So, yeah. Look, it all starts on Friday. It's here, regional play, as early as I think 1 o'clock local time, 2 o'clock. I'm looking at some of the times. I think 2 o'clock local, meaning could be central. I'm seeing some game. I mean, it's going to be wall-to-wall, man. By the way, it's not called Bases Loaded anymore.
Oh, really?
The ESPN, they've rebranded. Hang on, I got this because I saw it last night. I know Mike Rooney does great work for ESPN and also D1 Baseball. He was tweeting it and promoted it. Tell me what you think of this name, and then we'll end on that note. It's not Bases Loaded. It's now going to be called on ESPN with the quad boxes, all the context, you know, the national coverage of everything going on. It's going to be called Squeeze Play.
Huh.
I don't know if I'm a fan.
I like Bases Loaded better. But and I hate to knock ESPN. They didn't do anything to me. But they don't do the NFL red zone thing very well. Like, the NFL Network does red zone, which is, and to me, the greatest television spectacle of sports entertainment that exists. The NFL red zone on Sundays throughout the football season. But, like, what are they, the goal line? Is that what they do on ESPN News? I don't even know if they do it anymore. That's bad. They don't do a very good job of it. I don't know why the Bases Loaded makes way more sense. It looks like noon Eastern time is when we will have our first games on Friday.
Okay.
Virginia, South Carolina at noon, Norfolk State, East Carolina at noon. Liberty and Duke at noon, South Florida, Florida at noon, Army, Texas Tech at noon. And then you got ball the rest of the day until, you know, roughly midnight. Actually, probably going to go over into the next day because LSU Gonzaga is slated for a 10 p.m. Eastern first pitch.
And so is Grand Canyon and Arizona. So, yeah, it would have made all the more sense in the world service for me to just click D1 Baseball Top 25 scores and click on Friday rather than scroll.
That's what I did, man.
All these PDF files of 16 PDFs of each regional and try to scan the time. So I'm not the smartest sometimes, not the sharpest tool in the shed, that's for sure. But, hey, I'll find a way to get to the end.
Hey, you can't make an omelet without breaking a couple eggs, all right?
Hey. Yeah, that's well put. You are a savant. You are a wise man. I appreciate your time today. I know we've gone long. We had a lot of stuff to get to. And enjoy baseball this weekend, man, okay?
Yeah, you too, buddy. I'm excited. We got some tournament action, babe.
He's on Twitter at @L_Cerberito. I'm on Twitter at Kyle Shass. NCAA tournament. The curtain drops this weekend, Friday, noon Eastern. Games all day. We'll talk to you next week ahead of the Super Regionals at some point. Until then, enjoy the games this weekend. Bye.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.